Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. Right, where to begin? It's going to be fun. We're going to have loads of energy. Murph is on sparkling form this week after a rest of 2 weeks. And Dan Killick is, absolutely raring to go. And I'm bringing my newfound optimism to this podcast as well. So don't worry about the small matter of Wales taking a hammering in Dublin or the 10 years of neglect to the club scene. We're gonna get you through this one. Evening, gents. How are we doing?
You, Dan?
throwing the missed pass already. Yeah, I'm good, Jed. Fantastic. Here's the optimism. Really looking forward to next week.
I'm really looking forward to next year.
Yeah. Can we move on to next year? I'm good, thanks.
And how about you, Murph?
Yeah, I'm coming to terms with everything, you know. We've had, it's a classic kind of Welsh rugby where it's never as bad as people make out after a bad defeat, and it's never as good as people make out when we won a Grand Slam. Well, actually, we don't really get carried away with Grand Slams anymore because we've done a fair few, and we know from experience it can fall apart again quite quickly. So, I'm trying to keep perspective is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, fair enough. Well,
I like that.
Yeah. Let's try and keep that as a bit of a theme, because look, it was not pretty yesterday whatsoever, and obviously there's a lot of doom and gloom around. I think that's all we can do, isn't it? Apply a bit of balance and a bit of perspective, and we'll see how we get on. If you're talking me down from the ledge by the end of the show,
I won't be doing perspective when it comes to Jack O'Piper, right? There's no sugarcoating that.
Would you like to start with Jack O'Piper before we get into the Wales performance? Go for it. Shoot.
Well, as we know from Twitter yesterday, and you caught me out on my on what time I actually started to ask the question, because obviously we know me and everyone else here and listening is a one-eyed Welsh supporter, so. And like I've said before, most of my support of rugby boils down to cheering on my team and asking and wondering why the referee isn't penalising everything the opposition doing. Mm. You know, I'm aware that I'm a one-eyed fucker when it comes to that. But so I asked the question at halftime, which I didn't realise was 3 o'clock. I forgot it started at 2:15. I'm trapped in the every game kicking off at the same time on a Saturday kind of era. And so I asked, is it just me? And Dan didn't know what I was on about. So then I was starting to wonder, but then later Yestin came in and said, no, he is awful. And what I meant was, is it just me and the ref? And as time's gone on over the last 24 hours, some various clips have surfaced and it's become more and more evident that it wasn't just me. It was almost everyone. And it was we've been here before where we've said the referee is bloody awful, but it wouldn't have made any difference to the result, like it wouldn't have done it against New Zealand. But it feels like, aside from Australia, the Australia fans weren't happy with the game week when we won. It was a big decision, two big decisions that went against them there. But yesterday was just relentlessly one-sided at the breakdown, it felt like to me.
Yeah, but that's not the first game I've seen in Dublin by a side wearing green or blue, where officials are just completely blind to people flying in like Superman into rucks. Like I said to you, actually, if I'm honest, it was only when you mentioned it that I was like, oh yeah, you're right. I don't know, I think my eye was just drawn to the fact that they were tearing us apart out wide. The thing for me that was so bad was just how easy they were slicing through. They were slicing through us in the back line, which I'm sure we'll come on to. But yeah, it was, I just think that is something, you know, like you say, it's had no impact on the result. We were gonna take a hiding regardless. But it is something that's dangerous and makes for crap games and should be looked at a lot closer. You can see when someone's flying in off their feet, and it just needs to be refereed better.
Well, good sides like New Zealand and Ireland and sides that are very effective at a breakdown like that get away with more because they do it at such high speed and such intensity that it's a blur. I mean, you know, even watching it in playback, you're like, oh yeah, oh yeah, look at that, you know, and they get away with it because of the, like I just said, the intensity they play with. And Wales, on the other hand, get away with nothing because it's ponderous and naive and
turgid.
There's another word, timid.
Yeah.
That's what I'd like to say. No one looks like they're going to kill the first guy that jackals over the ball. I mean, you're not allowed to do that, obviously, but you know what I mean. No one looks like they're going to blast a massive hole in the pitch trying to get the ruck cleaned on the Welsh side.
I thought the only, in that regard, I mean, look, very few Welsh players came out of this with any great credit. I think obviously Basham is the one that springs to mind for lots of effort. And you know, I thought he did himself put in another big performance. Rowlands was the other one I thought in the pack who acquitted himself. But he was the only one really that was kind of bringing a bit of intensity to ruck time. Yeah, I think you're right. Timid is probably the word for it.
Yeah.
Dan, anything to add on the ref before we get stuck into listeners' questions?
Yeah, well, the ref's had form for poor, you know, poor refereeing performances before, isn't he? And you can't go 53 minutes, wasn't it, before he gave us anything, which is absolutely astonishing. And I know you mentioned that it wouldn't have changed the outcome, but when they're not reffed, when Ireland aren't reffed and New Zealand aren't reffed, it has a monumental impact on the game. And it's like working for a manager, isn't it, that really doesn't understand you, get you, and gives every single decision against you. You know, you'll take 3, 4, 5, 6 if you're resilient, but when it starts getting into the higher numbers, your head drops. And you know, you could see it out there. We weren't at the I don't think we were at the races to start with, to be fair, at all. But we were completely gone when we were lost. And the ref, it's just such a shame when that happens. He had a really, really piss poor performance. Awful.
The first 20 minutes looked like a captain's run for Ireland, where the Welsh team were basically Irish squad players told not to get in the way too much because they're going to go through their moves. That's what it looked like for the first 20 minutes. And like, I agree with Dan, what it did, the way it was refereed, if it had been refereed vaguely, properly, it would have kept it more competitive. We would have been in the tussle more because we just weren't in it.
Yeah, especially when
we'd have got a foothold at least. Obviously, not to the point where we'd have been in the game, but we'd have been involved in the game if we'd been given some of these decisions.
Yeah, but yeah. So for me, he had a poor game, but I'm sure we'll get on to our performance. It was
I'd agree with you on that. Let's move on. Let's have a look at the Wales performance. This question is coming from says DYFP, don't know what that stands for. But thanks for the question. It says, after yesterday's abject performance and Italy's spirited game today, are we genuine contenders for the wooden spoon? Dan?
No, I can't see us. Look, I think, as Murph pointed out when we, you know, at the very start there, that it was a poor performance from Wales. We've seen this. We've seen poor performances before, haven't we? And outside of the referee, the most disappointing thing for me was that we didn't have the physicality. We fell off everything. And you know, Basham you know, Basham made, you know, a lot of tackles and, you know, was our most effective carrier. But there wasn't, there still wasn't a huge amount going on. And I agree with you, Rowlands played pretty well, but it was still pretty ineffective, really, because they were on their own. They were in ones. And we just didn't have anyone that had that that real fight and, I suppose, you know, dogging them, really, to bring Yeston into it. That, you know, that they seemed to have all over the park. And we just looked scared. We looked afraid. And you can't be like that against them. We've shown before with, you know, lots of the same types of guys that we can match them physically, but we have to be up for it from the very off. And we weren't, were we? We weren't at all. But I still think that we're a better side. Certainly a far better side than we looked yesterday. But we need to front up physically. We need to make a couple of changes as well. And I can't see us losing to Italy.
How much of a difference does it make not having Alan Wynne-Jones, Ken Owens, Tipperick, Navidi, those players who are not only bring huge experience with them, but are also, you know, battle-hardened warriors in the pack? How much of a difference do you think that would have made yesterday?
Yeah, I think it makes a massive difference, doesn't it? I mean, I remember after the game, I had a chat with my dad and we were just saying, you know, what would we do for Navidi to be in there, you know? And then you move on to the other, you know, then you move on to the other players as well. But Navidi stands out.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, Ken Owens at hooker then, for instance, I think is, you know, the hooker position for us is we're struggling at, I think, in terms of, you know, set piece. Then that the whole sort of spine of the side, I think, you know, feeds back through, and we just don't look as if we're going to do a job on anyone. We look so sort of almost like calm. And I know you can't go throwing punches and, you know, leveling someone and everything else, but you've got to have the fight in you. You've really got to. And I think we were completely intimidated. And there didn't seem to be anyone that was going to really stand up and take it to him. Mm. Like, say, you know, an Armani character, who's an absolute, you know, nuisance, yeah, isn't he? I know he is. He's got a, you know, dirt, you know, he'd like to go down a dark alley with you, wouldn't he? He'd send a few through. But we haven't got anybody like that. And I just think we were crying out for that. Not that Ken is that type of guy, but he does it in a different way, doesn't he? You know, Alan Wynne-Jones isn't a fighter, but he brings it. For me, we massively lacked leadership and physicality yesterday.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Murph, thoughts on, you know, is a wooden spoon one of these things that's just us blowing things out of proportion, or is that a realistic scenario come the final day?
I think if we keep picking this side, it's a possibility, because Italy defended really stoutly today against France, and I can imagine, with the kind of shapeless, aimless kind of attack we got going at the moment, they'd just swallow that up all day, and we'd end up, I suppose, in a kicking duel with them, and then you can lose. Mm. You know, France obviously had the weapons to break them down, but at the moment we don't look like. Obviously, like I say, it's one game, and it's tempting to write off everything about us. But
I don't think it is one game, if I'm honest. I think you've got to look back at the autumn and say this is a continuation of it.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And, you know, when you're not at home like we were for all of the autumn, and, you know, hammered by New Zealand, admittedly, you know, without loads of players, lost to South Africa, fair play, a bit of an arm wrestle game, wasn't that bad. Yes, beat Australia, but again with a massive slice of fortune. And then the Six Nations, as I've said, it's like, you know, like the Six Nations last year, I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen a run of games where you get that level of luck. It's no wonder Jaco Pyper didn't give us a penalty for 60 bloody minutes. He's probably like, these bastards have had every decision for a year. Right? We're trying to level it out.
That's
brilliant. Well, you say that, but those red cards were all red cards.
Yes, no, you're right. You're absolutely right.
We're going over old ground there, but I think since people who were supporting the opposition would say that we were favoured with those games, but if you smash someone in the face, you're going to get a red card, and there's nothing Wales can do about that. All the ref You're just going off. And then, as we know, we've laboured past 14 men really well.
Yeah.
And then I think in the autumn, we didn't get any favours in, definitely not in the New Zealand game. South Africa was much of a match as we did. Some Australian fans were not happy with the way they were reffed. But
Nick Tompkins one was a freak as well, where it was quite obviously a knock-on. But, you know... How often then, we're going over old ground. You're right. But,
and then we got totally mugged yesterday. So I don't know if the maybe I'm reading too much into it, but the absence of Warren Gatland from our setup now means we are more prone to get decisions against us because we're effectively like a second-rate country half the time. And just going back over what you were saying at the start of this question about the players who were missing and the ones who could come back and. They would clearly make a massive difference to the side. Almost all of them, I believe, apart from George North, are over 30. Mm. All those players injured. Mm. And in two seasons, this side that got stuffed yesterday could be the first-strength side, the first-choice side. Unless all of them, all the boys who are just 30 go on and do an Alan Wynn and play to their 35, 36, but not everyone is capable of doing that. So,
The other week, Tom Shanklin put out a tweet that said, you know, struggling to see where the next crop of international class Welsh players are coming from. And, he's roundly kind of vilified for it. What do you think, Dan? Do you think, there's a crop of players here to work with who are going to be, you know, the next set of exciting players, or is the talent coming through not good enough?
I think we were exceptionally poor yesterday. You know, there's no doubt that those players that were playing yesterday in the pack can play better. They just can. They're better than that. And we just fell off everything and. For whatever reason, our heads just didn't seem in it. You could sense it, I thought, within almost before the whistle even gone off, before the kickoff. We didn't look with it. We didn't look happy. You know, you compare our sort of our makeup and the way we were holding ourselves compared to the Scots. Totally different. Totally different. There's some decent players still in that Welsh pack, absolutely. But it just did not function yesterday at all.
Absolutely right. While we're talking about kind of refereeing and the presence that Gatland may or may not have had, this question is from Dan, so I'm going to give it to Dan, and it's about Dan. Did Dan, presumably bigger, speak to the ref less than when he was captain? Sorry, less than when he wasn't captain.
Yeah, I think he did speak to the ref less, didn't he? Yesterday. I mean, he's usually, you know, he's kind of always a captain on the pitch, isn't he? Talking away, leading, quite often leading, maybe more than anyone else verbally, for sure. But yeah, he was a bit quiet yesterday, wasn't he? But it was mentioned quite a bit before. Yeah, you know, there was a bit of talk, wasn't there, with Sexton, you know, how they both have to, you know, cool themselves and keep it calm and everything else. And he did just that. Maybe he listened to himself a little bit too much, maybe.
I think he probably just too busy. I mean, he was defended all the time. And also, you can't, you know, get in any slanging matches or chops off when it's completely one-sided. You know, there's no opportunity for him to get into an argument with Sexton or Peter Omani because all he really was point at the scoreboard. You know, there's nothing to argue over. And like I say, they were coming down his channel a lot. So I imagine he was too busy to get. I mean, someone should have been asking Jacko about side entry at the ruck. I hope someone was. Someone in the side must have said, by the way, I've been wiped out from the side three or four times already, ref. Any chance of you having a look? But I don't know. I mean, there's so many experienced players stripped out the side at the moment, and maybe none of the forwards were even Ellis Jenkins, I hope, would have said something. We don't know, obviously, but if someone was making it just a polite inquiry, at least to my mate Jacko.
Yeah, I think when you know, some of those, like that side entry, There was a good few other side entries as well. To be fair, when they're so clear to the players, and they're not being picked up as well as all the other bits and bobs, I think I know they're professional and everything like that, but I do. It's bound to affect you, isn't it? Mentally, your head's bound to drop and think, hang on, we can't get anything here. And there's been one of the most illegal things, you know, clearly everyone.
If anyone's not aware, the clip that we're talking about is something posted by Ricky Harries on Twitter. I don't know if anyone or everyone follows him. I don't actually, but his tweet's gone. He's been quote tweeted 107 times. Because it's just so bizarre, and there's three Welsh players trying to jackal the ball, and Irish, I think it's Ryan Baird, I'm not sure, might be Jack Conan, just comes flying over like as if he's doing a pylon in school, from the side, blasts them all out, and the ref just waves on like as if nothing wrong has happened. I don't know, just so everyone listening is on the same page. That's the only reason I'm going over that.
Yeah, we'll make sure we give it a retweet after this as well, because it does show the that's always your biggest fear going to Dublin, is like if it's reffed like that, the Irish do it better. I'd say they do it better than New Zealand. They fly in and and do it in a way that like you put the nail on the head, Murph. It's a blur. There's a massive blur. The ball pops out the back and they've got a front foot ball to work with, and they just tear you apart. But with that in mind, I want to bring you on to this one. I've got some funny names to deal with tonight. This one's from Giving Up the Gun. And it says, how drunk was Pivak when selecting Adams at 13? I'm going to throw this to you, Murph. It was the biggest kind of talking point of selection going into it. What was he thinking?
Well, I think I've said to you two that he, doing that to Josh Adams, he turned a top quality, top try scorer at the last World Cup, unless I'm mistaken, top quality winger, like a lethal finisher, into an average outside centre. By doing that, that's what you do. And the only justification can be because he doesn't rate any of the outside centres in the country. So if you agree with him, you know, that there aren't any 13s in Wales at the moment who can cut the mustard, then it's not a problem. But if you disagree, then it's a stupid idea.
Killick?
Yeah, I think he definitely had a couple too many sherbets in a local pub somewhere. So, I didn't like the idea of it beforehand. I've got to say, though, that I was one of those that initially, and I think I know, Jed, I think you were with me on this as well, Murph, I'm not sure, but that was against, you know, couldn't quite see George North slotting in the centre, to be fair.
I was of that opinion, you know?
I couldn't be more wrong. I couldn't be more wrong, absolutely,
and had to hold my hands and go, God, you know, so wrong. But a lot of us were wrong, weren't we? He proved so many wrong. And now you know, you look at it, and obviously you can see it, but Adams, like with North, I could sort of get it in terms of his size and the way he would get an offload and something like that. But yeah, I just didn't think we needed to do it. That was the most frustrating thing. We have centres. We have a centre that's played in big games, got a lot of experience. He's clearly not rated, but yet he's in the squad. And it was a baffling decision. I'm not saying that he won't make, you know, maybe he'll make it as a 13, but on yesterday's performance, he struggled, didn't he? They targeted him and they got a lot from it.
Well, if you look at that Irish back line and you've got Sexton, Aki and Ringrose as that 10, 12, 13 axis, so settled, know each other really well. You know, you've got the option of Aki to be physical. You've got Ringrose to show that guile and pace, and I think they must have just been licking their lips when they looked at our equivalent. You know, Tompkins put in a big shift yesterday defensively. I think he made lots of tackles.
He did.
To be fair, but if you look at the positioning of everyone across that back line, it was just so fragmented, and all that stuff comes down. You know, it's always led by 13, isn't it? It's that one, but that's why John Fox is so good at it. because his defensive reads are so good that the rest of the line can play off him. And when you've got a guy doing that in Dublin who's barely played any rugby at 13, you've got a massive ask. And then you've got McNichol on the wing, who's not really renowned for his defending either. It was always going to be a really, really tough ask. And Ireland showed it repeatedly. It was just, they had so many options, and just kind of collapsed to shreds. And that,
I think, it was
a quick ball. It was a recipe for disaster.
It was. Yeah, it was too. It was. I say it was unfair on Josh Adams to be put in the centre. When you, quite rightly, when you said, you mentioned McNichol is not renowned for his defending at all, and it showed yesterday. And then you've got Louis Rees-Sammet as well, which is massively inexperienced, due to his age and everything else. Then you've got Liam, who hasn't played much rugby. So they quite rightly targeted the 13. It's a really difficult position to play, isn't it? And it was pretty embarrassing. The level of ease that they were doing the loops, and it kind of looked comical at times, but it was unfair. I'd say it was unfair on him.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Right, we've got loads more to get through, and we're going to take a quick break in a moment, but in the second half we're going to carry on with the questions from the listeners. We're also going to take a look at Cheerio Matters as Scotland beat England at Edinburgh, so all of that to come in the second half, but first we're going to take this quick break. Welcome to the second half of the Attacking Scrum podcast. Still loads and loads to get through. Hopefully it's not been too depressing so far. We're trying to, not that we're trying to gloss over things, but yeah, trying to pick out any positives where there might be. And as I say, at some point we're going to talk about Scotland beating England, so that'll give everyone a massive shot in the arm. But this is an interesting one. While we're trying to apply a bit of balance and a bit of perspective, this has come from Gareth Davis. And it says, should we really be blaming the WRU hotel for yesterday, or just face up to the fact that last year we got lucky and this year we've got a lot of players missing and we're still a work in progress? Right, who wants to feel that one? Oh, Dan's got a really pained look, so I'm going straight to him.
Technical difficulties. well, I think a lot of people have probably been waiting for or seeing this type of result coming for a while. We haven't looked great, have we, for a while? And but we've got, we got some wins, and a lot of people have said it's papered over the cracks, isn't it? I mean, the clubs have been left, haven't they? Hang out to dry. And is it affecting our players at the top? It has to, doesn't it? Has to affect them. So, yeah, I think we can probably lay some blame at the doors of the hotel and the roof walk. Yeah, those sorts of things when. Then the game, we're in such a precarious position, aren't we? So, yeah, it's probably something in it. But if we go down that route, we're definitely not going to bring the positivity.
let's bring the realism.
It's needed to talk about though. To be fair.
Well, some people are saying, I can't remember. I won't quote because I can't remember exactly who it is. Some people are saying that this situation has been more than a decade in the making, caused by underinvestment or whatever, or not underinvestment, that might be the wrong word, incorrect running of the professional game in Wales. So this problem has been coming as it is, and kind of Gatland has been papering over the cracks with putting a good side together on a regular basis. And like you said about the WRU Hotel, the background on that apparently is the big payout from CVC buying into the Six Nations or one of the leagues or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. None of that was passed on to the professional game. but it was spent on converting an old post office into a nice hotel on Westgate Street, which allegedly, I don't know if it's true, allegedly is not even sold out next week.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
I like, heard
if
that.
You're gonna,
yeah.
If you're going to build a hotel, you've got to sell it out around your market again, so it brings, you know, the
it might be because they priced it too high. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, but either way, if you're going to build a hotel, you've got to have people in it in order for it to make money. And and this is it. You know, if you're going to invest that money in something that is bricks and mortar rather than the game itself, then I think...
Well, it goes deeper than that because the pandemic situation resulted in a big massive loan being taken out, £20 million, I think.
Yeah.
And rather than soak it up as a governing body, they passed it on to the four regions. So that goes deeper then because I think it was Gwlad Rugby.
I've read the article. It's well worth a read.
Yeah, it's a good article, isn't it?
And their other point was, I forget now, something to do beyond the £20 million being passed on to the regions. I'll have to gloss over it. I can't remember there was a really good point in there somewhere if you all read it.
Yeah, if you do want some insight, we'll retweet the article as well. So it's come back to me.
Professional rugby. Yeah, thanks very much. I had a swig of San Miguel and it all came back to me. The point about the professional game in rugby is effectively run by the WIU committee. So tiny little village clubs. Or my club. My club shouldn't be involved in running my club at a championship club. They shouldn't have any say in professional rugby. It should be run as a separate body. And anyway, so my club all the way down to tiny little village clubs get a vote and a say on what happens to the professional game. And then we end up with retired geography teachers. He might be bloody brilliant, I don't know, but is he the right guy to be running as chairman of the WIU with say over how the professional game in Wales works when I've met him and he is a nice guy, when he is just the teacher and not qualified. The previous guy seemed to be qualified, Gareth Davis, but they kicked him out. So the member clubs, by the way, kicked him out because they're community clubs and they got no idea about professional rugby. So that's how deep Welsh people look into the game when they get beat.
well, that is true. But that's it though, isn't it? I think there's no denying that the whole narrative was set up. Not narrative was set up, but you could draw that conclusion going into this because of the continued poor performance, by the regions in Europe. And we're going, we're talking the best part of, that Scarlet's run aside. There's not been a good run in Europe since Cardiff were in the semi-finals, was there? So you got two semi-final appearances in the best part of a decade. Other than that, the sides have hardly got out of the groups. I'm sure I've forgotten something there, but it's we know that that's how badly performed it is. And at some point, it was going to happen that the national side would start underperforming and refusing to paper over the cracks. And that is where we're at now, because even under Gatland, we very rarely took a proper hammering. That's the thing, is it wasn't always perfect, but we didn't always take a hammering. And this is it. I think the two things are linked, but they're also kind of separate, if you see what I mean. If you'd appointed a qualified head coach who made better selections, would we have made a better fist of it yesterday? I think we probably would have. But it's not all his fault, and the injuries have an impact. And we've got to face facts that the game is run incredibly poorly at a professional level across the country. And so, look, I think all these things are linked. And we've said it a million times before. It's like, it's like an inverted pyramid in Wales. You've got the money at the top of the game is with the national side, and as it goes down, there's less and less and less and less and less money and less players. It's not a healthy situation to be in, and at some point when those cracks start to appear, things start to tumble. So whether or not anything's going to get done about it, I think is a completely different question.
You're right, but I don't think It seems to be consensus everywhere except the WRU now that the regions need to be better funded.
Yeah.
And that is because where did the WRU, i.e. the national team, get their players from? They get them from the regions. And the regions are constantly up against teams, even Italy, even Zebre and Benetton and all the other clubs they play against on any competition, who are better funded than they are. So... Yeah. I think everyone in rugby knows they just need the WI need to get their hands in their pockets when it comes to the regions. The trouble is professional teams and regional teams or whatever club playing in the highest level are massive money black holes. You can put any amount of money in, any amount, but they've got to do something.
Blimey. Right. There's no... Yeah, there's no sugarcoating that one, though, is there? But right, let's take one more before we have a look at what changes we'd make to the side for next week while we're talking about papering over the cracks. This one's from Paddy Gilling. It says, how worried were you by the lack of shots fired in attack? Pivak and Jones are meant to bring more of a focus on attack, but if anything, it seems like we've gone backwards. Dan, as our resident backs expert.
Yeah, well, I mean, the backs were... I don't think the backs could do anything because the forwards were under so much pressure, weren't they? Thomas Williams was, you know, certainly didn't have an easy time of things. The backs had such limited ball; any ball they had, it was poor. It was, you know, we were flat footed. It was going to be mission impossible for us to look to do anything, you know. You know, for us to look to do anything at all, really, when and also because the set piece was not, you know, didn't function that well. Then at times it functioned all right, but you know, you throw the ref in there as well. So, but you know, we had a couple of opportunities, didn't we, where we could have done something and we didn't. And I think, you know, that's the worry, isn't it? And it's been. Have we really seen any patterns for a while now that we could say, you know, that's the way the backs are looking to do things? So we can go, right, we accept it didn't work, but we're building something and we know the way we're going. We're okay then, aren't we? I think we'd all be sort of relatively okay in the knowledge that we can see the pattern that we're trying to build. I can't at the moment. Can you?
No. And like I've said before, there's no shame in taking a humping in Dublin. It happens. It happened, you know. What was the last win over there? 2012, we said, right?
They've had stuffings with all our best players in the pitch.
Yeah. Exactly that. And there's kind of no shame in that to a degree because we know that happened. But, you know, I look back to when we did this podcast 2 years ago, Dan, when you were over there. Has anything moved on in the... Obviously, it's pre-pandemic times, but has anything moved on with the back play since then? No. I just think for me, you know, like I always say, it's like you try and spot the form, right, and see what sides are really, really capable of. And I just think that championship last year was a massive red herring because, yeah, Murphy, you're right, there were red cards in there. But, you know, the England game, you very rarely get a slice of fortune as big as that. And I just don't think we played particularly well in it, with the exception of the French game.
The game we lost.
The game we lost. And at some point, you're going to have to play against 15 men for 80 minutes. And when
or 16 men like yesterday.
Or 16 men like yesterday. And and I think that's the thing for me. I haven't seen this side move forward at all under Pivak. And it's, you know, obviously there are difficult circumstances, but I don't know. It's really, really worrying for me at the moment. Because I've not felt optimistic about this side the whole time, really.
What I would say about yesterday, going back to the original question, were it not for Tyburn and Nyland getting overconfident and throwing offloads off the floor in their own 22, we wouldn't have scored a single point yesterday because we didn't look like scoring a single point off our own back in the whole 80 minutes. So take out the fact that Ireland were cruising and throwing offloads off the floor, we in their own 22, we would not have scored a point yesterday, and that would have been a fair reflection on our performance if we hadn't scored a single point.
So. And he could have also been, Murphy could have also been 50-0.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what was it? Was it 10-0 at halftime?
Yeah, which was 10-0 at halftime, which is a pretty good result.
Yeah. Well, 10-0 at halftime, you're in the game. I always think anything lower than 12, you could pull something out of the bag. And 10-0, you thought, well, you can get back in the game, couple of penalties, you're only 4 points adrift. And so, kind of looking at it that way. But you just felt like Ireland had not been massively clinical. Could have had other opportunities to do it. Didn't take all the points that were on offer. Sexton had one of his iffy games with the boot. I know the weather was, I know the weather wasn't great, but they can put up all those stats you like about predicted goal predictions and all this bullshit. The guy is just a little bit whiffy when it comes to it. Like he sometimes just has one of the schneid games with the boot. And I think, you know, if he'd have slotted those two 16-0. Then things could have got really ugly really, really quickly. It was exemplary other than that in the game. But, I don't know. It's just, it feels really, really messy to me. And I think, yeah, you're right. That could have been 40-50-0 yesterday, which I think would have been probably about a reflection of how badly we played. Changes for next week then? lots of people have asked us about this. The thing I would say, right, with the new optimistic me, is it does make a big difference playing at home. I think this side feels a lot more comfortable at home.
Oh, it wasn't always, house as well.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't always the case, actually, that, you know, I think sometimes teams took a real, they love coming to the Millennium, don't they? It's one of those places that people generally like to play. And I think that will make a difference next week. And I expect to see us a lot more competitive. But team selection has got to be right, and I think that was a shocker from Pivac this week. What would you be doing, Dan? What changes would you make?
I'd like to see Mike Phillips come in. in all seriousness, I did think, again, I was having a chat after the game with my dad, and we were saying now, I don't know whether it's true, but with Gats, you know, he loved the players that really believed in themselves, didn't they? And obviously Mike Phillips was one of those that, yes, he was a fantastic player, but, you know, wasn't an out-and-out nine, really. Was he a nines nine, a Rob Jones? He was an abrasive, back row, really, wasn't he, at nine? But he believed in himself, and then he carried the team with him. And I couldn't help but think, imagine Mike Phillips over there in that, the pissing rain, just really, getting everyone going. And, yeah, so Mike Phillips, please. But yeah, changes I would make.
Well, I'll tell you a player who's got a very similar personality who will be available next week and came off the bench yesterday, and you wanted to start him, and that's Ross Moriarty.
Or eight.
It's a good point. I thought Wainwright was poor yesterday, and I'm a massive fan of his, and he did a few things in there. He just didn't look like he was. I don't know. It's one of those games where he looked, I don't know what the word is, just a bit undercooked, Didn't look like he knew the way to get around people. Didn't look like he knew how to make the yards. And that was really frustrating.
My only issue there is size. So
yeah,
Moriarty to six, keep Wainwright just because of size, and then you've got a straight go between Basham and Ellis, and Tane Basham probably wins that at the moment. I'll go so far as to say if Pivac perseveres with Josh Adams at 13, I'd probably wash my hands of the team until after the next World Cup, because you got Owen Watkin and Jonathan Davis. Davis on one leg would have been a better option yesterday. Yeah. Than Josh Adams, and that's not a slight on Josh Adams. No. I think everyone knows that. If he doesn't, in attack, that if you add a platform and you add an attacking system and everything in place, then Josh Adams in theory is a good option. But if you haven't, which we haven't, all we've got is a lot of defending, and then try and work our way into the game after we've been battered for half an hour, then he's not the option.
I think I think we need Josh Adams as well. We need his defensive capabilities on the wing, don't we? We need him.
Yeah, absolutely.
We look, you know, we're not talking about his finishing here. We're talking about his defending. He's a great defensive winger, isn't he? Mm. And we just massively weakened ourselves in the back three by not having him there, because he does a lot. He does a lot, doesn't he, on the swing as well? Just come in behind. There's a real sort of, because Liam can often find himself in a bit of a pickle positionally. He's no halfpenny on the positional front, is he? So
this is not a vintage period of Liam Williams. He's not in his best form.
No,
he's not having like the whole of the autumn and yesterday in a red jersey, at least a Welsh jersey, at least. He doesn't play much for his club anyway. So
well, he came into the autumn.
He's not affecting games.
No, and he came into the autumn having not played since the Lions, if you remember, and having had his appendix out. Mm. And then in between then, the Scarlets have barely played a game of rugby themselves. He's featured in a couple of them. And then come into the Six Nations. And again, this is, you know, to go back to that point about papering over the cracks, Gatland was happy to take a squad of players who he knew were international class and beast them and get them ready for, you know, if not for the very first minute of the first game, to put together a competitive championship out of them. You know, he would take players who'd barely played any rugby. Sam was one of them. And would get them match ready fitness wise. But, you know, with not having that, it becomes very, very difficult to pick a player who, yes, is a great player. And I don't think there are any other options. But you're right, it's not vintage Liam Williams. And the fact that he's not playing any rugby doesn't help that.
It's so fine as well, isn't it, with the players? Because you've got, you know, if Jonathan Davis is, as Merv said, you know, on one leg, we know that he's not, you know, he's not the player he was, but he's still got it upstairs and he's got enough about him. So that what Gatland would have, if Gatland's there, he plays him, doesn't he? He would play him until both legs go. And even then, he's still probably going to hang on for a bit. So, and it has a knock-on effect across the whole side, doesn't it? Because Gatland quite often have to pick players that weren't match fit, really, weren't, you know, were coming back from injury, like Liam. But because he knew he got his selection right, it just made the game so much easier for everyone around, that if they were exposed, they weren't exposed as often as we found ourselves yesterday, I think. Having Adams in the centre had a massive effect on the whole back line, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, defensively, you know, just having John Fox there for everyone else to work off would have made such a huge difference. Again, we wouldn't have won the game, but I just think that everything about picking Adams at 13 yesterday screamed disaster. And I mean, whether or not he goes with it and sticks to his guns.
Yeah, well, if he does stick to his guns and picks Josh Adams again, where do you stand with it then? Because like, I would just say, okay, this is a hopeless cause now. We're just going to spiral downwards out of control until they change the coach. That's what I would say.
Well, I've felt like that since.
Well, okay. Well, it's just a straw that's breaking the camel's back.
I felt like that since autumn 2020. but I also, as you remember, had a word with myself during last Six Nations and was just like, cheer the fuck up and start enjoying rugby again. So I'm going to try and make a point of not washing my hands of the ever washing my hands of the side. But I know what you mean. Like I feel like that right now. Is I just think, you know, based on everything that's happened so far, it doesn't feel. It's not a coaching appointment that makes me feel like we're gonna do anything at the next World Cup. And right now, the Six Nations is really, really strong. You know, it's in a position where you've got four sides who are better than us, I think, and that's that could make for a difficult couple of years.
Has anyone else picked up on the body language in the Welsh coaches' box?
I look at that a lot, actually. Mm. Yeah,
there's a lot of blank expressions, like people just So Stephen Jones. Gethin Jenkins and whoever else is in there, just sort of like this. This is a good visual thing, but just blank. And then the only one animated in the whole room is Wayne. And they're all just sort of non-committal, giving no opinion, saying nothing, just there. That's what it looks like to the armchair viewer. It might be totally different if you're there and you couldn't hear what's being said, but it just looks like everyone is waiting for Wayne to react and respond and not giving their own input.
Dan?
Nope.
Oh, he's just sat there looking blank himself. Yes, Dan's still here, mate.
Still here.
I've noticed that. Again, it's very easy to read a lot more into this when you're getting hammered, isn't it?
Same as
I remember looking at, you know, that black eye that Alan Wynne Jones had last year and thinking, oh, this isn't right. There's, you know, there's fights in the camp and stuff like that. And the reality is sometimes you can just read a bit too much into this, but what's happening on the pitch doesn't reflect well on what's happening in the box.
Well, I would just like the coaches, whatever coach they are, Jonathan Humphreys, Fours coach, backs coach, defence coach, to be more animated.
Mm.
The fact that there's a lack of animation in the box worries me, that's all. And the other point, just wrapping up on this one, is ironically, I thought our best back yesterday was Nick Tompkins.
Yeah.
He agreed.
Coped with Bundiaki really well.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Yeah, had a fine game. Well,
it was a defensive effort, which I suppose is why played to his strengths, you know. But so what do I know?
Yeah, it's just so different, isn't it? Watching us, you know, having seen a side that was coached with so much structure defensively under Sean Edwards, and you know, and you see what he brought that to France again today. You know, having gone from that to watching like. It's almost like a schoolboy's game of rugby yesterday, watching it defend. And there are some players who were just, you know, like Tompkins, just rolled up sleeves and just made tackle after tackle after tackle. But as a unit, there's no cohesion there whatsoever. And that's the position we found ourselves in yesterday. With that in mind, I'd drop him for next week. It's really harsh, but I'm just not sold. I just think that Watkin and John Fox would be a better combination for next week, or if Willis is fit.
So Watkin at 12, John Fox at 13.
Yes, or
or the other way around.
Actually, yeah. All right. No, I'd probably go Watkin at 12.
Now we're talking.
What do you think, Dan? What would you be doing in the centres next week?
Yeah, I'd go with Watkin at 12. I mean, I think that's well documented, really. But I wanted Adams to go well in the centre, and you know, you have to think that they must be seeing something, because why would they do it? But I definitely go with Watkin in at 12. And for me, like you said, as good as Tompkins played, he's on his own there, isn't he? Mm. He was on his own defending, and I think quite often he plays a sort of lone role in that back line and like in attack as well. So. We've got to look at the combinations, haven't we? We can't have someone that's you know, played well, so then they hold their position. It's combos. Yeah,
I agree,
and we haven't
I
got
agree.
The combinations right at the moment. So, yeah, I think, you know, John Davis and Watkin is that gives me comfort. It really does. And I think that's a strong centre partnership right there with Halaholo on the bench to, you know, mix it up when there's a few tired legs out there.
Okay, so Josh Adams moves to the wing in the place of McNichol.
Yes.
Lewis Rees-Sammet, who had a horrible game yesterday, I thought, actually, as many people did. But I know he had a lot of strapping on his ankle because of an injury in the warm up. But he did not look comfortable yesterday, did he? And right from minute one, getting bumped by Matt Hansen, and then done. It was a really uncomfortable day at the office. But if he's fit, he's still on the wing for me.
Yeah, I'd keep him in. He did have a tough game, a tough outing, didn't he? Clearly wasn't comfortable at all, and it showed with everything, his passing, his running, all of it. So, but I would keep him there if he's okay.
And stick with Liam at 15.
He doesn't look right, does he, at the moment? But yes, I would stick with Liam at 15. But he got through the game, didn't he? And he just hasn't played enough rugby, but he is a quality player, isn't he? And I think that having the centres, you know, having those a different centre partnership and having Josh Adams in the wing will make it easier for him. It just take that bit of pressure off. It takes pressure off. I think we feel better, don't we? I mean, we're not coaches, crikey.
It takes pressure off everyone if you pick players in their actual position. I think, you know, I just you can't drop someone into a position like that at international level. And to Pivac, to his credit, as we've said, it worked with North. I think, you know, he didn't have his best game yesterday, but I think it's worked with Wainwright, and we probably all agree that he is an 8 over a 6 now. But I don't think, you know, that one's going to go down as a stinking experiment. And I'd be very surprised if it gets repeated next week.
Well, he's very likely to keep faith with Nick Tompkins, though.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah,
he regards him as like his best. Yeah, yeah. So it was more. It's more likely Tompkins will continue at 12, and then hopefully, like real fingers crossed job. Hopefully, he picks Watkin or Jonathan Davis at 13 instead of Josh. Josh moves onto his natural position of wing, and then it's just a case of Moriarty coming back in somewhere at the back row, and I will give him a personal stay of execution if he does that.
There you go, you got it on record. Let's move on. Let's have a chat about the other games this weekend. Let's quickly start with France Italy today. Pretty comfortable for France, really, but spirited, as we said, from Italy. Anything of note in that game, Murph?
I don't like Cameron Wachy playing in the second row. I think you just lose all the athleticism pace the guy got. And personally, I would have played an out second row alongside Walemsa and dropped Dylan Cretin or Dylan Creta.
Quite that. No, I'm not Cretin.
Cameron Wachy on the blind side. The thing is that their resources now are backing up something. Goes Charles.
It's insane, isn't it?
Charles Olivon is going to come back, and he's national captain. So that means that amazing back five someone's got to make room for him then. And they got an embarrassment of riches, and I don't suppose it really makes any difference who they pick. They're still going to be amazing, but I think they're wasting Cameron Wachy, putting him in the second row.
Yeah, and I also thought he was outstanding today as well. He's a brilliant player.
Italy, people who follow rugby closely would know their under-20s has been good for a good couple of seasons, and it's starting to show on the national side, because they would have got absolutely battered if a side like France faced them a couple of seasons ago. That would have been 60-pointer a few seasons ago. So they're improving. And like I say, if Wales don't improve, we will struggle to break them down, because their defence is... it's not outstanding, but it's good enough to keep us quiet.
And then Scotland winning the Calcutta Cup. How I really enjoyed that as a game. Obviously, not just the result. I thought it was there were errors in it, but it was a really exciting, tense Test match, and swinging one way then the other. Do you catch that one, Dan?
I did. Yeah, really enjoyed that game. Thought Scotland were. They looked really well coached, well drilled. They were disciplined, weren't they?
No, I didn't think they were, actually. I thought that's what let them down. Yeah, I thought that's the one chink in Scotland's armour, I think, is there are times when they get stuck in at the breakdown when they shouldn't. And, you know, there's just times when you can't hold Jamie Ritchie back because he wants to have another little bite at it and things like that. I think it was a couple of those penalties that kept England in the game. I mean, it was one of those England performances that I kind of thought everyone was saying that they're playing well, but I didn't think they were particularly impressive, if I'm honest. Particularly in the backs, I thought Scotland marshalled them really, really well, and it was only kind of those bits of indiscipline that that kept England in the game. But it was it made for a really tense finish as well.
On the subject of referees, we spent a lot of time talking about referees earlier. I thought he bottled the scrum penalties late on. England were pushing, going forward in the scrum, and those late three or four scrums at the end.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you know, the scrum was going down, and they didn't show any replays of the actual front rows or anything. But normally, the ref's going to penalise Scotland in that situation, and you could have ended up 20 all. which I'm not sure if England would have gone. I'm not sure if they'd have taken the penalty. They might have gone for the corner and done done a Chris Robshaw.
But if they wanted it to be 20 all, they could have taken they could have had a shot at goal with 76 minutes on the clock when George Ford
that was a strange
pathetic kick to the 22. You know, which didn't. If you're going to go to the corner, you've got to take a good slice off it, haven't you? I mean,
they were
from 22 minutes.
In many ways, our referee was worse than Jacko because
I thought he did have a bad on both sides. In the first half, I text you and I was like, "God, he's all over Scotland here, really harsh." And then, I mean, you could argue that Marler's boring in there and stuff like that. But either way, you know, he's got to front up and give a penalty either way at some point.
I don't think he was at fault with the penalty try though.
No.
Once he's flapped it like he's playing volleyball, it's clear that if he doesn't do that, then the ball's going to land in the winger's hands.
Yeah.
And you got no choice. So
the way he fell was horrible, wasn't it? right on his stupid coccyx. That was.
I for a split second, I thought because I didn't see the impact. I thought he was milking it out of embarrassment.
Yeah.
Yes.
But he didn't because. You know, it was just I mean, it's gone about 10 yards in the air, not quite directly up the pitch, forwards into touch. You know, the referee's got, even a bad one, the referee's got no option but to give a penalty try. So if you'd done that backwards, it'd be fine. If you'd done the same thing in a backwards direction, the Joe Marchant, who was sweeping around the back, would have picked that ball up and been no problem, but obviously he's facing the wrong way and he just launched it into touch.
It was so strange, right? Because he was obviously like, "Oh shit," and he just completely lost his head. He was all at sea, wasn't he?
Mm.
And he got himself in a horrible position, quite awkward to get himself into that position.
It's a rush of blood, isn't it? It's a rush. Of blood.
Yeah. Well,
if you go up and you don't get there, or you get up and you knock it forward. It's a slippery day. It was Darcy Graham on that wing, was it? He might have knocked it on as he tried to gather it anyway. And you're then back for the penalty, but you don't get a penalty try and you don't get the yellow card.
Well, that's kind of my point, because if it just fumbled to catch, I think he gets away with it.
I think
he gets away with anything, just a knock on and a scrum. But the fact that he's gone up and done a volleyball blocking at the net, you know, that type of tactic they do.
We've all seen Top Gun, mate.
Yeah, if he just tried to catch it, he was probably in a position where he couldn't quite get to it. It was just, you know, but the
he
option he took,
panicked, didn't
the option he took, yeah, the option he took left it, but it completely only one outcome, you know. So,
Well,
I suppose that's what happens if you leave a hooker out on the wing.
Well, yeah, that's it.
It was great play by Russell, wasn't it? Just switching
it
the kicks around. It was lovely, wasn't it? But yeah, I'm with you, Jed. They England played some great stuff, but then some really poor stuff, like really poor.
Well, I did think they might have a meltdown this tournament, just because of Marcus Smith. It's just not their cup of tea. What swashbuckling 10 is not. It's just not in their wheelhouse. Historically they've never liked it. They'd always rather a controlling 10. And I think with Marcus Smith there, he would, you know, he's quite swashbuckling for a Welsh 10. Mm. So I can imagine there being some, I don't know, I can see there being more issues in this tournament for England.
Well, they'll end up rushing Tuilagi back for a game late on. You can guarantee it. He came off the bench today, didn't he? And that's the thing, is that back line is just like, You really worry about that back line when Tuilagi's in it. And when he's not, I don't think you do. You know, if you look at that, I really like the fullback. He didn't have his best game yesterday, Stuart, but I think he's going to be a really class act.
He is a good player, but they didn't use him, did they?
No, and he's, you know, he's a, you know, I suppose he's more of a defensive, good under the high ball. Yes, he knocked one on yesterday, but I think, you know, I think he's a real talent. Joe Marchant on the wing doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever when you've got Jack Nowell on the bench, who's a proven international winger.
Yeah, who was brought on after the game had finished, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the centre, you've got Daly, who's not played there for England for a very long time, and obviously I don't think Eddie particularly fancies him anyway. And then you've got Slade playing inside centre. It all just looked, there was nothing settled about it, was there? So, you know, losing to Elanga and Farrell, they, I don't know, yeah, that selection was
classic Eddie Jones. Classic Eddie Jones, isn't it? Keep him in the seat because he does some such strange things. They were also kicking away. They were putting in lovely little kicks when all they needed to do was keep the ball in the hand, and they had numbers to use Jonathan's words, numbers. how wide, didn't they?
Yeah.
Very odd from England. Very odd.
Let's bring it back to next week's game, though, to wrap up, fellas. We've got obviously Scotland in Cardiff next week. Based on what you've seen from the two sides this week, how do you see this one going, Dan?
Oh, it's. I mean, you the smart money's on Scotland, I'd say, isn't it, for next week? But I can see us getting a win. You know, I can see us getting a win at home. You're going, aren't you, sir?
Who gets sent off for Scotland for us to get the win?
Well, Richie's injured now, isn't he? So, not him.
One of the Fergusons again.
Yeah, I thought. Yeah,
yeah.
Was brilliant yesterday.
Yeah, we could do with Fergus. We could do with him at eight, having a Kenser going. It would be typical, wouldn't it, of us now to get a win, wouldn't it?
Well, I get tell a win you what. I tell you what, they have got a very, very bad record in Cardiff. The 1-6 Nations win against Wales was in that rescheduled game, wasn't it, that we played in front of an empty house in Llanelli. So they've not actually won in Cardiff. I think 2002 was the last time they did that. Now, obviously, they were horrendous for large chunks of that, and they're a much better side now. But the question mark has always been doing it away from Murrayfield. But I think they've got to fancy their chances next week. I think that Russell and Hogg as two leaders in the back line has just really, you know, has really matured into something now. And they've got a really mean pack, and they've got some strength in depth as well. You know, they've got some really good players. Like we were saying last week, I was bigging up that Ben Vellacott. Didn't even get on the bloody bench, and Ben White comes on and scores a try. So, you know, they've got some good options, and I think they're looking a settled side. I think Scotland get the win next week. But I don't think they'll run away with it. I think it'll be one where they have to kind of really pull on their class to get it. I think it might be Scotland by three.
They're coached well, aren't they, though? They look like a side that's coached really well. Everyone's on the same, you know, everyone's on the same page, good defensively. Tough side to break down. They've got the mercurial talents of Finn Russell. He's just incredible, isn't he? So they look like a different setup now. But we've said this before, haven't we? So we'll see.
Our selection, obviously, on Thursday is going to tell us everything. And then, based on the way they operate Scotland at the breakdown and the way we operated at the breakdown against Ireland, even if we greatly improve, which I think we can't really get much worse than yesterday, even if we improve, the way they operated the breakdown means we won't be able to maintain enough possession to win the game. But I think we'll do better than we did yesterday. So so long as he doesn't persist with Josh Adams at 13, I think we'll go better. But I just won't be enough because we haven't got the intensity on the breakdown myself.
Fair enough.
What about if we? So we haven't got the back row right then, do you think?
Well, whoever picks in the back row, obviously we've said we'd like Ross Mariotti to come back, but that's not going to solve all our problems. It's going to improve. It's not going to solve all our problems. The breakdown, we're just not intense enough. I don't think we commit enough men either with breakdown. So, if you didn't know the history of the two clubs, you know, of how well we play against them at home, and you just looked on the form of the two games that have been played so far, you'd have a massive bet on Scotland. A massive bet.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, you would. Right, let's have a quick look at the other fixtures before we call it a day. So, England, Italy, I mean, anything to suggest that there's going to be an upset there?
No, I can't see. I can't see anything but an England win there, really.
It's ideal fixture for England to steady the ship after yesterday. So,
Classic bounce back game, isn't it?
Hmm.
And then the big one, which is France Ireland on Saturday evening, straight after the Wales game.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's potentially title decider, isn't it? You know, I know it's very hard to say that after week one.
It's like an unofficial world championship because they've both beaten New Zealand in the last few months.
It's in Paris. I'm going for a France win here. Nothing's going to change my plan of a France Grand Slam. I still think that's on at the moment. So I'm going France, but I think it's going to be a very, very tight game. I think again, this is like a 2-3 point game for me.
Yeah, I think France are going to win, just because they're not going to get dominated at the breakdown, and they've got just as many weapons to use as Ireland have, possibly more, and home advantage will probably sway it their way, I think.
Daniel?
Yeah, tough one to call this, isn't it? I think that probably France will just have a little bit too much at home. But close game.
Close game. Yeah, looking forward to that one. I am, as you said there, Dan, I'm going to the game next week as well. I'm looking forward to going to watch Wales live, which I haven't done since for ages. So
yeah,
I did, because I think the Wales Scotland game in 2020 was the one I had tickets for that year, and obviously that was postponed. So yeah, looking forward to at least experiencing it, seeing what this watered down lager and closed bars for the second half brings. See if that changes the atmosphere. But yeah, we'll report back. Expect an extensive report on that one next week, if nothing
else.
Well,
there did be, in fairness, there'd be a lot of eyes on the conduct of the crowd at that game because of what happened in the autumn with kids getting vomited on and God knows what else is going on in the stands. So there'd be a lot of scrutiny on what happens next Saturday.
The fact it's a 2:15 kickoff helps as well, I think.
Mm.
You know, I think that should help from that perspective. But yeah, we'll see. Yeah, a comprehensive report on that, fellas. Thank you. thanks for joining us this week. Thanks as always to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some great quality coffee and support a young Welsh business, then you can do that by going to socoffeetrades.co.uk. That is it for this week. We'll be back next week to chat rugby with you. Thanks for listening. Podcast Network.